This is Audible.
Recorded books and one-click digital present Golden Sun by Pierce Brown. Narrated by Tim Gerard Reynolds.
Once upon a time, a man came from the sky and killed my wife. Beside him now, I walk on a mountain that floats over our world. Snow falls, battlements of white stone and shimmering glass yawn out of the rock. Around us swirls a chaos of greed. All the great goals of Mars descend upon the Institute to lay claim to the best and brightest of our year. Their ships swarm the morning sky, cutting over a world of snow and smoking castles for Olympus, which I stormed only hours before.
"Take a last look,"
he tells me, as we near his shuttle.
"All that came before was but a whisper of our world. When you leave this mountain, all bonds are broken, all oaths dust. You are not prepared. No one ever is."
Across the crowd I see Cassius with his father and siblings as they make their way to their shuttle. Their eyes burn at us over the white, and I remember the sound of his brother's heart as it beat its last. A rough hand with bony fingers lays claim to my shoulder, clutching possessively. Augustus stares at his enemies.
"Bellonas do not forgive or forget. They are many, but they cannot harm you."
His cold eyes peer down at me, his fresh prize.
"For you belong to me, Darrow, and I protect what is mine."
"As do I." For 700 years my people have been enslaved without voice, without hope. Now I am their sword. And I do not forgive. I do not forget. So let him lead me onto his shuttle. Let him think he owns me. Let him welcome me into his house so I might burn it down. But then his daughter takes my hand, and I feel all the lies fall heavy on my shoulders.
They say a kingdom divided against itself cannot stand. They made no mention of the heart.
Part 1. Bow.
Hic sunt leones. Here be lions. Nero au Augustus.
Chapter 1. Warlords.
My silence thunders. I stand on the bridge of my starship, arm broken and held in a gel cast, iron burns still raw on my neck. I'm bloody damn tired. My razor coils around my good right arm like a cold metal snake. Before me, space opens, vast and terrible. Small fragments of light prick the darkness, and primordial shadows move to block those stars on the fringes of my vision. Asteroids. They float slowly around my man of war, Quietus, as I search the blackness for my quarry.
"Win," my master told me. "Win as my children cannot, and you will bring honor to the name Augustus. Win at the academy, and you earn yourself a fleet."
He likes dramatic repetition.
It suits most statesmen. He'd have me win for him, but I'd win for the red girl with a dream bigger than she ever could be. I'd win so that he dies, and her message burns across the ages.
Small order. I'm 20. Tall and broad in the shoulders, my uniform all sable, now wrinkled. Hair long and eyes golden, bloodshot. Mustang once said, I have a sharp face with cheeks and nose seemingly carved from angry marble. I avoid mirrors myself. Better to forget the mask I wear, the mask that bears the angled scar of the golds who rule the worlds from Mercury to Pluto. I am of the peerless scarred, cruelest and brightest of all humankind, but I miss the kindest of them. The one who asked me to stay, as I bid her and Mars goodbye on her balcony, almost a year ago. Mustang. I gave her a horse-crested gold ring as a parting gift, and she gave me a razor. Fitting. The taste of her tears grows stale in my memory. I've not heard from her since I left Mars. Worse, I've not heard from the Sons of Ares since I won at Mars's Institute more than 2 years ago. Dancer said he would contact me once I graduated, but I've been cast adrift among a sea of golden faces. This is so far from the future I imagined for myself as a boy. So far from the future I wanted to make for my people when I let the suns carve me. I thought I would change the worlds. What young fool doesn't? Instead, I've been swallowed by the machine of this vast empire as it rumbles inexorably on. At the Institute, they'd trained us to survive and conquer. Here at the Academy, they taught us war. Now they test our fluency. I lead a fleet of warships against other golds. We fight with dummy munitions and launch raiding parties from ship to ship in the way of gold astral combat. No reason to break a ship that costs the gross yearly output of 20 cities when you can send leechcraft packed with obsidians, golds and greys to seize her vital organs and make her your prize. Amid lessons of astral combat, our teachers hammered in the maxims of their race. Only the strong survive. Only the brilliant rule. And then they left and let us fend for ourselves, jumping asteroid to asteroid, searching for supplies, bases, hunting our fellow students, till only 2 fleets remain. I'm still playing games. This is just the deadliest yet. It's a trap, Roke says from my elbow. His hair is long, like mine, and his face soft as a woman's and placid as a philosopher's. Killing in space is different from killing on land. Roke is a prodigy at it. There's poetry to it, he says. Poetry to the motion of the spheres and the ships that sail between. His face fits with the blues who crew these vessels. Airy men and women who drift like wayward spirits through the metal halls, all logic and strict order. But it's not so elegant a trap as Carnus might think. He continues. He knows we're eager to end the game, so he will wait on the other side. Force us into a choke point and release his missiles. Tried and true since the dawn of time. Roke carefully points to the space between 2 huge asteroids, a narrow corridor we must travel if we wish to continue following Carnus's wounded ship. Everything's a damn trap. Tactus Aurath, rangy and careless, yawns. He leans his dangerous frame against the viewport and shoots a stim up his nose from the ring on his finger. He tosses the spent cartridge to the floor. Carnus knows he's lost. He's just torturing us, leading us on a little merry chase so we can't sleep. The selfish prick. You're such a little pixie, always yapping and whining. Victra Au Julii sneers from her place against the viewport. Her jagged hair hangs just past ears pierced with jade. Impetuous and cruel, but neither to a fault. She disdains makeup in favor of the scars she's earned through her 27 years. There are many. Her eyes are heavy, deeply set, her sensual mouth wide, with lips shaped to purr insults. She looks more like her famous mother than her younger half-sister, Antonia. but in her capacity for general mayhem, she far outstrips both.
"Traps mean nothing," she declares. "His fleet has been dashed. He has but one ship. We're seven. How about we just bust his mouth?"
"Darrow has seven," Roke reminds her.
"Your pardon?" she asks, annoyed at the correction.
"Seven of Darrow's ships remain. You call them ours. They are not ours. He is Primus."
"The Danzig poet strikes again. The point is the same, my goodman."
"That we should be rash instead of prudent?" Roke asks.
"That it is seven against one. It would be embarrassing to let this drag out any longer. So let's squish the Bellona thug like a cockroach with our sizable boot, fly back to base, take our just rewards from old Augustus, and go play."
She twists her heel for emphasis.
"Hear, hear," Tactus agrees. "My kingdom for a gram of demon dust."
"That's your fifth stim shot today, Tactus?" Roke asks.
"Yes! Thank you for noticing, Mommy dearest. But I grow weary of this military crank. I believe I desire pearl clubs and copious amounts of respectable drugs."
"You're going to burn out."
Tactus slaps his thigh. "Live fast, die young. While you're a boring old raisin, I'll be a glorious memory of finer times and decadent days."
Roke shakes his head. "One day, my wayward friend, you're going to find someone you love who makes you laugh at the silly person you once were. You'll have children, you'll have an estate, and somehow you'll learn there are more important things than drugs and pinks."
"By Jove!"
Tactus stares at him in utter horror.
"That sounds resolutely miserable."
I peer at the tactical display, ignoring their banter. The quarry we chase is Carnus Au Bellona, the older brother of my former friend Cassius Au Bellona, and the boy I killed in the passage, Julian Au Bellona. Of that curly-haired family, Cassius is the favorite son. Julian was the kindest, and Carnus? My broken arm stands testament. He's the monster they let out of their basement to kill things. Since the Institute, my celebrity has grown. So when the news reached the Violet Gossip Circuit that the Arch-Governor was finally sending me to further my studies, Carnus Au Bellona and a few hand-picked cousins were dispatched by Cassius's mother to study as well. The family wants my heart on a plate. Quite literally. Only Augustus's badge holds them back. To attack me is to attack him. In the end, I could give a bloody piss about their vendetta or my master's blood feud with their house. I want the fleet so I can use it for the sons of Ares. What a mess I could cause. I've made a study of supply lines, sensor stations, battle groups, data hubs, all the pressure points that might cause the society to stagger. "Darrow!" Roke comes closer. "Guard your hubris. Remember, Pax? Pride kills." "I want it to be a trap," I tell Roke. "Let Carnus turn and face us." He tilts his head. "You've set your own trap for him."
"Now what makes you say that?"
"You might have told us. I could have..."
"Carnus falls today, brother. That is the simple fact of the matter."
"Of course. I only want to help. You know that."
"I know."
I stifle a yawn and let my eyes sweep the bridge pits behind and below me. Blues of many shades toil there, working the systems that run my ship. They speak more slowly than any other color, save obsidian, favoring digital communication. They are older than I, graduates of the midnight school, all. Beyond them, near the back of the bridge, gray marines and several obsidians stand sentinel. I clap Roke on the shoulder. It's time. Sailors! I call to the blues in the pit. Sharpen your wits. This is the final nail in the Bellona coffin. We put this bastard into the ether, and I promise the greatest gift in my power to give. A week of solid sleep. Prime? A few of the greys near the back of the bridge laugh. The blues just rap their knuckles on their instruments. I'd give half my substantial bank account, compliments of the arch-governor, to see one of those pale air-brains crack a smile. Enough delay, I announce. Gunners to positions. Roke, cluster the destroyers. Victra, attend targeting. Tactus, defense deployment. We're ending this now. I look over at my wispy helm blue. He stands central in the pit, beneath my command platform, amid 50 others. The snaking digitats that mark the blue's bald heads and spidery hands glow subtle shades of cerulean and silver as they sync with the ship's computers. Their eyes go distant, as optic nerves revert to the digital world. They speak only out of courtesy to us.
Helmsman, engines to 60%.
Aye, Dominus. He glances at the tactical display, a globular hollow floating above his head, voice like a machine.
Mind, the concentration of metal in the asteroids presents difficulty in assessing spectral readings. We're a mite blind. A fleet could hide on the other side of the asteroids.
He doesn't have a fleet. Into the breach, I say. The ship's engines rumble. I nod to Roke and say, Hic sunt leones. The words of our master, Nero au Augustus, arch-governor of Mars, 13th of his name. My warlords echo the phrase. Here be lions. Chapter 2. The Breach. On the tactical readout, the six nimble destroyers move around my remaining man-of-war. Eerie silence from the blue crew as the functions of war take over. On the plain, through which their minds now drift, words are slower than icebergs. My lieutenants monitor my fleet. At any other time, they'd be on their personal destroyers or leading men in leechcraft, but at the moment of victory, I want my fellows near. Yet even when my lieutenants stand here at my side, I feel that separation, that deep gulf between their world and mine.
Missile signatures, says the comm blue.
The bridge does not burst into action. No warning lights panic the crew. No shouts break the stillness. Blues are icy specimens, raised from birth in communal sects that teach them to embrace logic and enact their function with cold efficiency. It's often said they're more computers than men. The dark space beyond my viewport blooms fresh with a thick veil of micro-explosions. Our flak bursts in a great screen of dull white clouds. Incoming missiles explode as the flak bursts detonate the missiles' payloads prematurely. One gets through, and a destroyer on our far wing ripples from the simulated nuclear blast. Men would pour from her. Gases would seep out. Explosions might puncture holes in the metal hull and bring burning oxygen rupturing forth like blood from a whale, only to be swallowed in a blink by the black. But this is a war game, and they do not give us real nukes. The deadliest weapons here are the students. Another ship falls victim as railgun salvos rip through the flak.
Darrow?
Victor worries. I stand, absently thumbing the place Io's ring once graced. Victor turns to me.
Darrow, he's chewing us to pieces, if you haven't noticed.
Lady has a point, Reap.
Tactus echoes, face glowing blue from the tactical display.
Whatever you have in store, don't be shy about it.
Comms, tell Ripper and Talon squadrons to engage the enemy.
I watched the tactical display as the squadrons I dispatched a half-hour prior sweep around either side of the asteroids and descend on Carnus's flank. From this distance, they are impossible to see with the naked eye, but they pulse gold on the display.
"Congratulations, my friend,"
Roke whispers before it is even done. There's a strange reverence in his voice, any earlier frustration now gone.
"With this, everything will change."
He touches my shoulder.
"Everything."
I watch my trap close, feeling the imminent victory drain the tension from my shoulders. The greys of my bridge take a step forward. Even the obsidians lean to watch the displays as Carnus's ship registers my squadron's signatures. He tries to flee, blasting his engines to escape what's coming, but the angles conspire against him. My squadrons loose missiles before Carnus can deploy a flak screen or bring his own missiles to bear. 30 simulated nuclear explosions rack his last ship. There's no point to capturing his ship at this point in the game, and so the blue fighter pilots relish a little overkill. And like that, I have won. My bridge erupts with shouts from greys and the orange technicians. The blues rap their knuckles vigorously. The obsidians, at odds with this high-tech world, make no sound. My personal valet, Theodora, smiles to her younger charges at the bridge's valet station. A former rose courtesan, well past prime age, she's heard her fair share of secrets and serves as my social advisor. Across the ship, from engines to kitchens, the victory transmits through hollow screens. This is not just my victory. Each man and woman shares it in their own way. That is the scheme of the society. To prosper, your superior must prosper. As I found a patron in Augustus, so must the low colours find their own in me. It breeds a loyalty of necessity to golds that the colour system itself cannot create by mere dictation. Now my star will rise, and all aboard will rise with it. Power and promise are celebrity in this culture. Not long ago, when the Archgovernor announced he would sponsor my studies at the Academy, the HC channels blazed with speculation. Could someone so young, someone from such a piteous family, win? Look what I did at the Institute. I broke the game. I conquered the proctors, killed one, and bound the others like children. But was that a mere flash in the night? Now those prattling bastards have their answer.
"Helmsman, set course for the Academy. We've laurels to claim,"
I announced to cheers. Laurel. The word itself echoes through my past, making bitter my mouth. Despite my smile, I feel no great joy at this victory, just grim satisfaction. "One more step, Io. One more step forward."
"Preta Daro Au Andromedus."
Tactus plays with the title.
The Bellona will shit themselves. I wonder if I can leverage this into a command, or do you think I must join your fleet? Can never tell. Gory damn bureaucracy is so tedious. Coppers to grease, golds to lobby. My brothers will want to throw us a party, naturally.
He nudges me.
At a brother's wrath party, even you might finally get bedded.
As if he'd touch your friends.
Victor squeezes my hand, fingers lingering as though she wore a gown instead of armor.
Loath as I am to say it, Antonia was right about you.
I feel Roke flinch, and remember the sound of Antonia cutting Leah's throat as she tried to lure me from hiding at the Institute. I had stayed in the shadows, listening to my small friend fall wetly to the mossy ground. Roke had loved Leah in his own fast way.
"I've told you before not to mention your sister's name in our presence.
I say to Victra, her face souring at the curt dismissal. I turn back to Rogue.
As Praetor, I do believe I have authority to stock my fleet with personnel of my choosing. Perhaps we should bring back some old faces. Severo from Pluto, the Howlers from wherever the hell they got shipped off to, and maybe Quinn from Ganymede?
Rogue flushes in the cheeks at the mention of Quinn's name. Personally, I wish for Severo the most. Neither of us is particularly diligent at keeping in touch over the Holonet, especially me, because I haven't had access to it since the Academy began. Anyway, all he's partial to sending is holograms of uniquely perverted unicorns and video clips of him reading puns. Pluto, if anything, has made him stranger, and perhaps more lonely.
Dominus!
The Helm Blue's voice draws me to the display.
What's wrong?
I ask. His eyes are glazed. Distant, jacked into the ship's sensors, seeing the raw data of the display I stare at.
Not clear, Dominus. Sensor distortion. Ghosting.
On the large central display, the asteroids are there in blue. We're gold, enemies red. There should be none left. Yet, a red dot throbs there now. Roke and Victra walk toward it. Roke motions his hand, and the data transfer to his datapad. A smaller hollow globe floats in front of him. He enlarges the image and cycles through analytic filters.
Radiation, Victra hazards. Debris.
The asteroid's core could cause a mirror refraction from our signal, Roke says. Couldn't be software. It's gone. The red dot flickers away. But the tension has spread through the bridge. All stare at the display. Nothing. There's no one else out here except my ships and Karnas's defeated flagship, unless... Roke turns to me, face drawn, terrified.
Flee!
He manages, just as the red signal burns back to life.
Full power to engines!
I roar.
30 degrees plus our midline. Launch remaining missiles at the surface of the asteroid!
Tactus commands. Too late. Victor gasps, and I see with my naked eyes what our instruments struggle to detect. One shadowed destroyer emerges from a hollow in the asteroid. A ship I thought we defeated 3 days ago. Its engines were off as it lay in wait. Its front half is torn and black from damage. Now its engines blast at full power, and its trajectory takes it directly toward my ship. It's going to ram us.
Evac suits and pods!
I shout. Someone's screaming for us to brace for impact. I rush to the side of the bridge where my command escape pod is built into the wall. It opens at my word. Tactus, Roke, and Victra sprint into its confines. I hold back, shouting at the Blues to hurry and unsink. For all their logic, they'll die for their ships. I range about the bridge, screaming at them to activate their escape hatch. The Helm Blue does, pressing a button that causes a hole to dilate in the floor of the pit. One by one, they unsink and are sucked down the gravity tube into their escape pods.
Theodora!
I shout, seeing her prying at a young Blue, who still clutches his operations display with white-knuckled fear.
Get in that gory damn pod!
She doesn't listen, nor does the Blue let go. I start toward them just as the proximity sensor lets loose one final warning blast. All slows. Bridge lights throb red. I jump for Theodora, wrapping my arms around her, and the destroyer hits my man-of-war at her midline. Clutching Theodora to my chest, I'm thrown 30 meters across my bridge, slamming into a metal wall. White pain rips across my left arm along the seams of the mending break. I'm slapped with darkness. Lights dance there, first like stars, then as weaving lines of sand disturbed by wind. Red light seeps through my eyelids. A gentle hand pulls at my clothing. I open my eyes. I'm wrapped around a dented electrical column as the ship shudders, groaning like an ancient dying beast sinking in the deep. The column trembles violently against my stomach as the destroyer finishes shearing through our middle, gutting us with slow cruelty. Someone's shouting my name. Sound fades back into being. Lights bathe the bridge, alternating shades of murderous red. Warning sirens. The ship's swan song. Theodora's delicate old hands pull at me, like a bird pulling at a fallen statue. I'm bleeding from my forehead. My nose is broken. I wipe the stinging blood from my eyes and roll onto my back. A broken display sparks beside me. It has my blood on it. Did it fall on me? A bar lies beside it, and my eyes drift to Theodora. She pried it off. But she's so small. Her hands cup my face.
Get up, Dominus! If you want to live, you have to get up!
The old woman's hands tremble from fear.
Please, get up!
Groaning, I pull myself to my feet. My command escape pod is gone. In the collision it must have launched, either that or they left me behind. So too has the blue escape pod jettisoned away. The frightened blue has become a stain on a bulkhead. Theodora can't tear her eyes away from the sight.
There's another pod in my quarters, I mutter.
Then I see why Theodora winces, not from fear, but pain. Her leg is shattered, splayed off to the side like a length of wet, cracked chalk. They don't make pinks to last through this.
I won't make it, Dominus. Go, now.
I bend to a knee and throw her over the shoulder of my good arm. She whimpers horribly as her leg shifts under her. I feel her teeth rattle, and I run. I run through the broken bridge toward the wound that is killing my ship, through the bridge level's hallways into a scene of chaos. People swarm the main halls, abandoning their posts and functions as they race to escape pods and the troop carriers in the forward hangar. People who fought for me. Electricians, janitors, soldiers, cooks, valets. They'll never make it to safety. Many change course when they see me. They tumble forward, leaning against me, panicked and crazed in their mania to find safety. They pull at me, screaming, pleading. I push them off, losing a small part of my heart as each falls behind. I can't save them. I can't. An orange grabs Theodora's good leg, and a grey sergeant hits him in the forehead till he drops like a stone to the ground.
Clear a path!
The thick grey bellows. She whips her scorcher out of her tactical holster and shoots it into the air. Another grey, remembering himself, or perhaps thinking I'm his ticket out of this death trap, joins her in parting the chaos. Soon, two more carve a path at gunpoint. With her help, I make it to my suite. The door hisses open at my DNA's touch and we move through. The greys back in after us, training their scorches at the 30 desperate souls who ring the entrance. The door hisses, as if to close, but an obsidian pushes through the crowd and jams herself into the doorframe, preventing the door from closing. An orange joins her, then a low-ranking blue. Without hesitation, the grey sergeant shoots the obsidian in the head. Her companions gun down the blue and orange, and shove them off the doorframe so it can close. I tear my eyes away from the blood on the ground to lay Theodora on one of my couches.
Dominus, how much room is there in the escape pod?
The grey sergeant asks me as I head to the pod's entry lock. Her hair is buzzed in military fashion. A tattoo on her tan neck peeks from under her collar. My hands fly over the control prism, entering the password with a series of hand motions.
Four seats. You get two. Decide among yourselves.
There's six of us.
Two,
the female sergeant asks coldly.
But the pink's a slave.
One of the greys hisses.
Not worth shit, says another. She's my slave, I growl. Do as I say. Slag that.
Then I feel the silence as much as hear it, and I know one of them has pulled a gun on me. I turn, slowly. The stocky old grey is not a fool. He's backed out of my reach. I've no armour, only my razor. I might be able to kill him. The others ask what the hell he thinks he's doing.
I'm a free man, Dominus. I should get to go.
The grey says, voice trembling.
I have a family. It is my right to go.
He looks to his fellows, bathed in the nasty red of the emergency lights.
She's just a whore. A jumped-up whore.
Marcel, put the gun down, says the dark-skinned corporal. His eyes are heavy for his friend. Remember your vows. We'll draw lots.
It's not fair. She can't even have children.
And what would your children think of you now? I ask.
Marcel's eyes fill with tears. The scorcher quivers in his thick hand. Then a gunshot. His body stiffens and crumples lifelessly to the deck as the bullet from the sergeant's scorcher carries through his head to slam into the metal bulkhead.
We do it by rank, the sergeant says, holstering her weapon.
Were I still the man Io knew, I would have stood frozen in horror. But that man is gone. I mourn his passing every day, forgetting more and more of who I was, what dreams I held, what things I loved. The sadness now is numb. And I carry on despite the shadow it casts over me. The escape pod opens, magnetic lock thudding back. The door hisses upward. I pick Theodora from the couch and strap her into one of the seats. The straps are nearly too big, made for golds. Then something deep and horrible roars in the belly of my ship. Half a kilometer away, our torpedo stores detonate. Gone is the artificial gravity. Gone are the stable walls. It's an insidious sensation. Everything spins. I slam into the escape pod's floor. Ceiling? I don't know. Pressure vents out of the ship. Someone vomits. I smell it rather than hear it. I shout at the Grace to get in the pod. Only one stays behind now, face drawn and quiet, as the sergeant and a corporal pull themselves into the escape pod. They strap in across from me. I activate the launch function and salute the Grey who stays behind. He salutes back, proud and loyal, despite the quiet in him, as he faces his last moment of life. Eyes distant and thinking of some young love, some path not taken. Perhaps wondering why he was not born gold. Then the door closes, and he is gone from my world. I'm slammed into my seat as the escape pod shoots away from the dying ship, ripping through debris. Then we're weightless again, and drifting away from trouble as inertial dampeners kick in. Out our viewport, I see my flagship burping plumes of blue and red flame. Processed helium-3, which powers both ships, ignites near my man-of-war's engines, causing a chain-effect explosion that rips the ship apart. Suddenly I realize it wasn't debris I felt against my escape pod as I left the ship. It was people. My crew. Hundreds of low-colors spilled into space. The Greys sit opposite me.
He had three girls, the dark-skinned corporal says, shuddering as the adrenaline fades away. 2 years and he was out with a pension, and you popped him in the head. After my report, coward won't even scrape a death pension, the sergeant sneers.
The corporal blinks at her.
You cold bitch.
Their words fade, overcome by the beating of blood in my ears. This is my fault. I broke the rules at the Institute. I changed the paradigm and thought they wouldn't adapt. That they wouldn't change their strategy for me. And now I've lost so many lives I may never know the tally. More people just died in a blink than during a whole year of the Institute. Their deaths opening a black hole in my stomach. Roke and Victra hail me over the comms. They will have tracked my datapad and know I'm safe. I barely hear them. Anger, thick and evil, swirls inside me, making my hands shake, my heart slam. Somehow, Carnus' ship continues through space after bisecting my command, damaged but not broken. I stand in my pod, unbuckling the seat's restraints. At the far end of the escape pod lies a spit tube with a preloaded star shell, a mechanized suit meant to make a man a human torpedo. It's designed to launch Golds to asteroids or planets because the pod wouldn't survive atmospheric re-entry. But I'll use it for vengeance. I launch myself onto that Bologna bastard's bloody damn bridge. Theodora has not yet woken. I'm glad. I tell the corporal to help me into the suit. 2 minutes later, I'm in the metal carapace. Takes another two to argue with the computer over the calculations required for my trajectory to intersect with Carnus's so that I can smash through the bridge windows. I've never heard of anyone doing this, never seen it even attempted. It's madness. But Carnus will pay. I start my own countdown. 3. The enemy ship passes arrogantly 100 kilometers away. It is like a dark snake with a blue tail, a bridge in place of eyes. Between us, 100 escape pods glimmer, so many rubies cast into the sun. 2. I pray that I will find the veil if I do not survive this. 1. My controls go dead, and red flashes across my helmet. The proctors override my computer and freeze my controls. No! I roar, watching Carnus's ship disappear into the black. Chapter 3. Blood and Piss. 833 men and women. 833 killed for a game. I wish I never knew the tally. I repeat the number again and again as I sit in the passenger hold of the rescue ship sent to ferry me back to the academy. My lieutenants sit, afraid to meet my gaze. Even Roke leaves me be. The instructors disabled my craft before I could launch. They say they did it to spare me a fool's mistake. The gambit was rash, stupid, and unfitting a Gold Praetor. I stared blankly at them as they debriefed me via hollow. We reached the academy in the ebbing day hours of my ship's time cycle. The place is a great domed metal port on the fringes of an asteroid field, ringed with docks for destroyers and men of war. Most are filled. Home to the Academy and Mid-Sector Command, it is one of the hives of the Society's military for the mid-worlds of Mars, Jupiter, and Neptune, though it does serve other planetary forces when their orbits take them near. My fellow students will have been watching here in the dormitories. So, too, will have many fleet officials and peerless who flocked here for the final weeks of the game, for parties and viewing. None will mention the cost of life demanded by Carnus's victory, but the defeat will set back my mission. The Sons of Ares have spies. They have hackers and courtesans to steal secrets. What they did not have was a fleet. Nor will they, now. No one greets my lieutenants or me at the dock. Reds and browns bustle about to the orders of 2 violets and a copper, who make preparations for Carnus's victory in the grand antechamber. The blue and silver of House Bologna trim the cavernous metal halls. The eagle crest of his family covers the walls. They have white rose petals for him. Red rose petals are reserved for triumphs, true victories where gold blood is shed. The blood of 833 low colours doesn't count. That's a clerical issue. My lieutenant slept as we travelled back to the Cairn. I did not. Tactus and Victor stumbled now ahead of me, walking silently, as if still wrapped in slumber. Despite the heaviness in my shoulders, I don't yearn for sleep. Regret lies behind my bloodshot eyes. If I sleep, I know I'll see the faces of those I left to die in the ship's hallways. I know I'll see Io. I can't face her today. The academy smells of antiseptic and flowers. The rose petals sit in bins off to the side. Ducts above recycle our breaths and purify the air, making a steady hum. Fluorescents piss pale light down from the ceiling, as if to remind us that this is not a kind place for children or fantasies. The light, like the men and women here, is harsh and cold. Roke stays at my side as we walk, though his aspect is deathly. I tell him to get some sleep. He's earned it. "And what have you earned?" he asks. "Not a day of sulking. Not a day of self-flagellation. Of all the Lancers, you are second. Second? Brother, why not take pride in that?"
"Not now, Roke."
"Come now," he continues. "It's not victory that makes a man. It's his defeats. You think our ancestors never lost? You don't need to huff and puff about this and make yourself one of those Greek clichés. Drop the hubris. It was just a game."
"You think I give a shit about the game?"
I wheel on him. "People are dead. They chose lives of service to the fleet. They knew the danger and died for a cause."
"What cause?"
"To keep our society strong." I stare at him. Could my friend, my kind friend, be so blind? What choice did these people have? They were conscripted.
I shake my head. "You don't understand a thing, do you?"
"Of course I don't understand. You never let anyone in. Not me, not Severo. Look how you treated Mustang. You drive friends away as though they were enemies."
"If he only knew."
I find the garden abandoned. It sits at the top of the Cairn, a large vestibule of glass, earth, and greenery, designed as a retreat for fluorescent-weary soldiers. Stunted trees sway in a simulated breeze. I take off my shoes, peel off my socks, and sigh as the grass goes between my toes. Lamps above the trees make a false sun. I lay beneath them till, with a groan, I pull myself up toward the small hot spring that lies in the center of the glade. Bruises, most faded, stain my body like little ponds of blue and purple ringed with yellowing sands. The water soothes my aches. I'm thinner than I should be, but strung tight as piano wire. Were my arm not broken, I'd say I was healthier than at the Institute. Fighting on Academy bacon and eggs beats the shit out of the half-raw goat meat of that place. I find the Himanthus blossom by the side of the pool. It took life where no water laps. It's indigenous to Mars, like me, so I do not pick it. I buried Io in a place like this. Buried her in the fake forest above Lycos Mine, where I last made love to her. We were scrawny, innocent things then. How could so frail a girl have such a spirit, such a dream as freedom, when so many strong souls toiled and kept their heads down for fear of looking up? I shouted at Roke that I did not care about the defeat. Yet, I do. And there's guilt for caring about that when so many lives should demand all my sorrow. But before today, victory made me full, because with every victory I've come closer to making Io's dream real. Now defeat has robbed me of that. I failed her today. As if knowing my thoughts, my datapad tickles my arm. Augustus calls. I peel the hair-thin display off and close my eyes. His words echo in memory. Even if you lose, even if you cannot take the victory for yourself, do not allow a Bellona triumph. Another fleet under their control will tip the scales of power. So much for that. I float in the water, drifting in and out of sleep till my fingers wrinkle and I grow bored. I'm not meant for these quiet moments. I pull myself from the water to dress. I can't keep Augustus waiting for long. Time to face the old lion. Then sleep, maybe. I'll have to stand and watch the damn victory for Carnus. But after that I'll be away from this ugly place and headed back to Mars. And maybe Mustang. But as I turn to leave the pool, I find my clothes are gone. As is my razor. Then I sense them. Hearing their military boots behind me, their loud, excited breaths, four of them, I guess, I pick a stone from the ground. No. I turn, and I find seven blocking the one entrance into the garden, all golds of House Bellona, all my blood enemies. Carnus comes with the Bellona fresh from his ship. His face is as haggard as mine, his shoulders maybe half again as broad. He towers over me, an obsidian in every way but birth and mind. That laughing mouth of his grins with uncommon intelligence. He rubs a hand over his dimpled chin, muscled forearms looking like they're carved from smoothed river wood. There's something terrifying about being in the presence of someone so large that you can feel the vibrations of their voice in your bones.
Looks like we caught the Augustus lion away from his pride. Lo, Reaper. Goliath.
I mutter, using his call sign. Goliath the Breaker. Goliath the Sun Killer. Goliath the Savage. Mustang says he once broke the spine of a fancy loon-born gold over his knee, after the brat thought to splash a drink in his face at a pearl club. His mother then bribed the judiciary to let him off with a fine. The list of fines he's paid for murder stretches longer than my arm. Greys, pinks, even a violet. But his true reputation comes from killing Claudius Au Augustus, the arch-governor's favourite son and heir, Mustang's brother. Carnus's cousins orbit around him. All Bellona. All born under the blue and silver sigil of the conquering eagle. Brothers, sisters, cousins to Cassius. Their hair is curly and thick, faces all beauty. Their influence stretches across the society, as does the reputation of their arms. One is much older than I, shorter but more powerfully built, like a tree stump with blonde moss covering his head. He is a man in his 30s. Kellen, I remember now, a full legate, a knight of the society. And he came here with his brothers and cousins, for me. Arrogance drips off that one. He feigns a yawn as he plays these schoolyard games. Fear thunders into my chest. I find it difficult to breathe, yet I smile, fingers grazing the datapad's comm functions behind my back.
Seven Bellona, I chuckle. What need have you of seven, Carnus?
You had seven ships against my one,
Carnus says.
I've come to continue our game.
He cocks his head,
Did you think it ended with your ship dying?
The game is over, I say. You won.
Did I win, Reaper?
Karnas asks. At the cost of 833 people.
Whining because you lost?
Asks Cagney. She's the smallest of his cousins, a 20-something lancer to Karnas' father. She's the one cradling my razor, the one Mustang gave me. She swishes it through the air.
I think I'll keep this. I don't think I've even heard of you using it. Not that I'd judge. Razors are tricky. The perils of an uneducated upbringing, I fear.
Go stick your fist up your cousin. I sneer. Must be a reason you curly-haired shits all look alike.
Must we listen to him bark, Karnas?
Cagney whines.
I taught Julian to fish, Reaper.
Kellen, the legate, says suddenly. As a boy, he didn't like it because he thought it hurt the fish too much, thought it was cruel. That's the boy your master had you kill. That is the measure of his cruelty. So, how grand do you feel? How brave do you fashion yourself?
I did not want to kill him. Oh, but we want to kill you.
Karnas rumbles. He nods to his cousins. Two of the Bologna break branches off the trees and toss them to their kin. They have razors, but apparently they want to take their time.
If you kill me, there'll be consequences, I say. This is not a sanctioned duel, and I am peerless. I am protected by the compact. This will be murder. The Olympic Knights will hunt you, try you, execute you.
Who said anything of murder?
Karnas asks.
You belong to Cassius.
Cagney's fox-like face splits with a smile.
Today you are protected by Augustus.
Karnas says.
His chosen boy. To kill you would mean war. But no one goes to war over a little beating.
Cagney favors her left leg. Knee injury. A cousin of hers leans on his heels. Frightened of me. The big one, Karnas, squares up, meaning he doesn't give a piss about whatever damage I can do. Kellen smiles and stands relaxed. I hate those sort of men. Hard to judge. I calculate my chances. Then I remember my broken arm, my injured ribs, and the contusion of my eye, and cut those chances in half. I'm scared. They cannot kill me, I cannot kill them. Not here, not now. All of us know how this dance will end, but dance we do. Karnas snaps his fingers, and they rush toward me all at once. I throw the stone into Cagney's face. She goes down. I rush at Karnas, howling like a mad wolf, slipping past his first blow, and rage a flurry of strikes into his nerve centers, driving my elbow into his right bicep, rupturing tissue. He rocks back, and I press into him, using his bulk to shield me from the others and their sticks. I strip a stick away from one of the Bologna cousins, leveling her with an elbow to her temple. Then I turn, spinning the stick toward Karnas's face, but it's blocked. Something hits the back of my head. Wood shatters. Splinters dig into the scalp. I don't stumble. Not until Karnas hits me so hard in my face with his elbow that a tooth pops out. They don't take turns coming one by one. They surround me, and they punish me with the efficiency of their deadly art, cravat. They aim for nerves, organs. I manage to stand, hit a few of my assailants, but I'm not long on my feet. Someone jams their stick into my skin, impacting the subcostal nerve. I drip down to the ground like melting wax, and Karnas kicks me in the head. I bite through half my tongue. Warmth fills my mouth. The ground is the softest thing I feel.
choking on salt. Blood and air spray out of my mouth as Carnus puts his foot on my stomach, then throat. He laughs.
In the words of Lorne Au Arcos, if you must only wound the man, you better kill his pride.